You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practice Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. Hey, and if you're a dentist, you're looking at the future and you're like, gosh, I got to take this practice to the next level. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about with a man who knows exactly what that means. And we're even going to get a little vulnerable today and talk about what's really going on in the world as you dual process your journey with what you see. With my good friend, Dr. Leonard Hess from the Dawson Academy, which has been an important part of my life and as well as many other dentists' lives. So, hey, and if you're just joining us for the first time, I know we got a lot of dental students, and we even have some pre-dental students showing up. Here's our mojo. It's just this. I'm just inviting my friends on here to talk about the things that matter. My hope is this. I hope you get a couple things out of it, and I know you will, today that just make your practice and your life a little bit better. I want you to keep showing up with us. And my hope is, even if you listen to it for 10, 15 minutes, we give you something to think about. And you go back to your practice or to class and you go, you know what? I'm on a good path here. And I can think better about my life because that's a big piece of it. And so today I have my good friend, Dr. Leonard Hess from the Dawson Academy. Now, I know who you are. A lot of people know who you are, and I often refer to you like you have the best hair, you're one of the best dressed men in all of dentistry, and you're well-spoken, and you're part of a very important organization. And today we're going to be talking about, you know, getting ready to take your practice to the next level. But hey, before we jump into it, I always like people to know who they're listening to. Who's Dr. Lenny Hess? What do you do, man?
Hey, Kirk, thanks for having me. You know, it's always great to be on your show. You know, it's always so fabulous. You know, your passion and energy and your enthusiasm for dentistry is such a bright spot in this profession. So it's always great spending time with you. So first off, let me say thank you. Who I am, you know, I'm a general dentist. I am a human being that practices dentistry. I'm not a dentist. And, you know, and that's one of the things that we like to say at the Dawson Academy is we like to make good dentists better. But that's how I really view myself, as somebody that's just out there to help other people achieve their highest level of health. And you know, the great thing about dentistry is, you know, even though I'm a dentist and I'm passionate about dentistry, I have a lot of things in my personal life that is equally passionate about. And you know, dentistry is such a wonderful profession because it gives us the opportunity to really water seeds outside of our professional life. And, you know, and isn't that the best thing about dentistry is, you know, if you're the kind of person who works so they can live and doesn't live to work, then dentistry is such a great profession. And so I'm a country dentist outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And I've been blessed enough to kind of go down a path and get into education. And I've been lecturing since 2005. And I kind of worked my way up from single A, double A, triple A. And somehow I found myself as the clinical director of the Dawson Academy. So it's been quite a journey.
Country dentist, you're a damn good country dentist, damn excellent country dentist. So, and then I'm extra, like, this journey and what we're going to be talking about today includes something that I'm crazy excited about. You know, we're in Milwaukee, and so we're going to actually, for the first time ever, host a seminar one, which we, you're going to, so like, I'm just out of my mind, crazy excited, because our goal was to create some intimate education. And I thought, man, this is one of the top things we could possibly do. So I want you to talk about the thinking behind that, because you've even changed the title of it a little bit from what it used to be. So describe what that means, and then let's go deep into the journey of how we get to the next level.
Yeah, so you know, we've changed the seminar a little bit. So if you think about the Dawson Academy, our core curriculum is seven different classes. Three of those are lecture only courses, and four of them are hands-on classes. And you know, so what we used to call seminar one is called functional occlusion. It used to be called from TMJ to smile design, but we've changed it a little bit over the last year or so, and now it's called functional occlusion, putting your practice in the top 10%, because you know, really, that's what we're after. Is we're after, you know, we want to help dentists create practices that support their lives instead of so many dentists that their lives are supporting their practice. Yeah. And that's what it really means to be in the top 10%. Because, you know, there are different ways that you could be in the top 10%. Well, you can be in the top 10% for production, which is nice, but I want to be in the top 10% for net income. You know, there's a lot of people out there that they're producing $1 million a year, yet they're dragging home $180,000 or $200,000 a year because their overhead is 80, 85%. I mean, it's not uncommon that we're running into dentists that have overhead pushing 85%. And boy, I'll tell you what, dentistry is really hard work. And if you're working that hard only to be making 15 or 20 cents on the dollar, then there's things that have to change. So yeah. What we're really doing is we're hoping to be able to touch and connect with dentists at that level of where they want to be, as they want to try to create more financial success. But we also want to put you in the top 10% of time. We want to put you in the top 10% of people that their practice is supporting their life. We want to help you to create a situation to where when you walk out the door, you go home and you're present with your family and you're not worried about the patient that pissed you off or the temporary that keeps coming off or the restoration that just broke, or you know, you did your first veneer case and they're coming off or they're debonding or the incisal edges are chipping, or you know, you have that patient that's ready to do an all-on-S treatment and you don't know where to go. And those are what we want to do. We want to put you in the top 10% of quality of life through being a dentist. That's what we're really after. And there are a lot of foundational skills that we weren't really taught in dental school that we need to learn if we want to put ourselves in that top 10%.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about that. Like, what are the things, like people will say, well, what are they going to teach me? I'm like, it's more than you know. It's not so much you're going to learn some incredible technical foundations, but it's going to challenge your thinking. You're going to be able to see problems in a bigger light. You know, there's stories, oh, I don't have any TMJ problems in my practice. And then they sit in a room with you for a day and they're like, man, it's everywhere. You know what I mean? Exactly. And so I think one of the challenges that dentists need to understand about going to the next level, it's not about cranking out more crowns. It's about seeing things differently and understanding things differently. And then the journey never ends. I mean, you're facing a very dynamic environment. And one of the things I always love to say that I learned from you guys is like managing forces. We can talk about all these diagnostic things and like how to fix them, but like we're still going to have to deal with forces that patients put on the dentistry we create. So it's understanding that journey. And when these things walk into your office, you can say, I've seen this before. I know where we're going, right?
Well, you know, dental school, you know, it's a hard process. It's difficult, but it really only prepares us to be minimally competent. You know, dental school prepares you to pass a board examination, which is an examination of minimal competency. Can you do an MO on tooth number 12? Can you scale and root plane? Can you set some denture teeth? Can you do an endo access on a fake tooth? And, you know, can you do a crown prep on a single tooth? But, you know, that's what it prepares us for. And then when we get out in the real world, the challenges that we face are far beyond bacteria, because really dental school treats you to treat bacterial related problems, periodontal disease, decay. And, you know, and then when teeth break, we're always blaming it on a previous restoration or the patient was biting on something they should have. But the reality is that, you know, most of our most challenging patients, their biggest problem is function and force and how force is being managed within the stomatognathic system. And that's what we have to become really good at. And there's so much growth opportunity. to become a good problem solver. And Kirk, when you think about it, in the world, you know, who makes the most money? Who are the most successful people? If we want to look at money, it's people that can solve the biggest problems. And right. What we want to do is we want to be able to set you up to become a problem solver within your community. When somebody has a problem that's beyond normal and ordinary, we want you to be the go-to dentist in that community, right. And those people will start coming to you. But there's a lot that you need to learn to become that problem solver. Yeah. And if you commit yourself to that journey, the money's going to start, it's going to start beating down your door. And the next thing you know, you're going to have to see less patients. You can work less days. Your production per hour is going to start to go up. And dentistry is going to start to become fun again, because, you know, dentistry becomes fun when it's predictable and profitable. Right. It only can become profitable when you know how to perform predictable dentistry.
Okay, go back to the magic word, because that's one of the key pieces to happiness for a dentist. It's not money, it's called predictability. You see it on all ends. How important, if I'm a young dentist, listen, now if you guys are listening, how important is the word predictability to my mental health and the future of my career?
Well, a lack of predictability, I predict that you're going to have a very rough road ahead of you, and you're not going to enjoy dentistry as much as you could, because, you know, when it's predictable also, not only is it profitable, but that's how your patients are happy. Right. And your patients are happy. They start going out in the community and they start talking, and you build your reputation that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you talk to these kids, and, you know, and they're not always kids. Sometimes they're dentists that are a little bit more on the mature side of things. When they're sitting in seminar one, like, do you ever ask them, I don't know this, but I'm asking you, like, do you ever say, why are you here? Like, what are you hoping to get out of this? And what are some of the things that you hear that are people that are searching to be better?
Well, that's just it. You know, we always ask people, what are you hoping to gain by being in this class?
Right.
And for so many of them, well, it's interesting, Kirk, you know, because what I've seen, I've been a part of the academy now for, well, gosh, going on 14 years. And during that period of time, it's interesting because I've seen a demographic shift to where our average dentist that's coming in to go through our core curriculum, that back then they were probably, you know, somewhere between, I would say, 40 and 50 on average. But now, probably 70% of our dentists coming through the academy now have been in practice less than 5 years.
Wow.
Which is, it's really interesting. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is I think that just with the exposure, the access to information now, there are so many dentists now that are young, or they're in dental school, they just realize there's so much more that they need to learn out there.
Yeah.
And it's and there's information that is readily available that highlights the fact that they need to learn more. So it's been an interesting paradigm shift that we've seen, you know, over the last probably, I would say, 7 years or so. But what happens is when they come through this first seminar, and I remember when I was a young dentist sitting in it as well, the first thing that happens is a veil gets lifted, right? Because you're seeing what's behind the curtain now, and you can't unsee it. You know, you know, now that you understand things in a different way, it changes your life forever. And it you go to a fork in the road where it's either I need to start to learn more, or I'm going to be an ostrich and I'm going to stick my head in the sand and I'm going to keep it there for the next 25 years and hope that I don't suffocate or the world doesn't pass me by. But so, you know, just like we've been talking about, they want their dentistry to be more predictable. A lot of times we have dentists that come in, they've attempted 3 or 4 large restorative cases and it hasn't worked out like they thought it would. We get a lot of dentists that they've gotten themselves into some nightmare scenarios. And then they're just wondering, well, what happened? Because, you know, maybe I went to this other seminar and they told me I could do this and it seemed really easy. And I saw a lot of nice before and afters, but nobody ever shows you. They show you the baked cake, but they don't show you the ingredients that went into the cake. And then they don't show you the proper way to put the ingredients into it to produce that beautiful result.
Yeah. So now I'm just going to play a young dentist. Listen, Lenny, you get to see a lot of dentists come in and out. Tell us, like, what are your favorite elements of a trajectory? You're like, oh, look at that kid. And then other elements where you see somebody like, oh, no. So, like, everybody wants to hear, like, where can I go wrong? Or what could I learn from your observations that I can apply to what I'm doing right now? What are some of the elements of people that do well? And then maybe some of them that don't do so well. What do you see?
Well, you know, it starts with The people that do well with it, they start to get into understanding that, to be a very effective dentist, you need to stop being a tooth mechanic and you need to start being a physician of the masticatory system. And so what you need to understand is you need to gain the perspective that teeth are functioning within a system. And that system is made up of the joints, the muscles of mastication, the back teeth, the front teeth, and those four components, they all need to be working in harmony with each other if we're going to expect our patients to have long-term success.
Right.
You know, probably the biggest paradigm shift that happens when people start coming in the academy is the understanding that dentin, the second layer of the tooth, isn't supposed to be exposed in the mouth. It's the inner layer, it's not the outer layer. And you know, what we train people to do is you have to start thinking about that as being an open wound. And what the problem as dentists is that, you know, our treatment planning philosophy as a profession overall has been completely boxed into a corner by the insurance industry.
Right.
Right. So every dentist that accepts insurance or they're very insurance dependent, you know, they're basically always playing by the rules of the insurance company. And so then patient behavior has been changed to also then fit within this boxed in corner of what's my insurance going to pay for? If my insurance doesn't pay for it, I don't want to do it. So then dentists they've caught in the middle of this trap that's based on bacteria, but most of our patients' problems are caused by function. Well, guess what? Well, guess what insurance doesn't pay for? Insurance doesn't pay for restoring a worn tooth. Mm-hmm. You know, insurance doesn't pay for helping people that are having temporomandibular joint problems. Insurance doesn't pay for helping people that are having occlusal muscular problems. And then a lot of these people that are having all these problems, the reality is that their teeth need to be fixed because the function is not correct. And if the function is not correct, then we start to see that trickle down effect into everything else in the somatotopic system.
Yeah, it's so exciting to start the journey. And one of the things that Pete always said is like, don't ever tell yourself you have it all figured out because I'm still learning. Even from, you know, when he was 64 and I was 24, that's one of the, he's like, just stay curious because you're going to learn so much. And then, you know, you see people come down there or go to one of your courses and it doesn't go so well. What's the common theme when it doesn't go so well? Is it more of a, hey, just I want to learn aesthetic procedures or I don't apply it? Or is it just not a commitment to doing it a different way? I mean, what's your thoughts?
All right. Well, I know exactly what happens for most of the dentists that they invest this money to come through our curriculum. They take this time to do it. And then they go back in and they half apply what they learn or they pick and choose. You know, for instance, Kirk, one of the keys of predictability is that at the DOS Academy, we have developed checklists for every single phase of treatment. Diagnosis, two-dimensional treatment planning, three-dimensional treatment planning, refining your provisionals, laboratory communication. No matter what it is, we have a checklist to help you, to guide you step by step into that predictability. And what happens is people come in here, they have a very busy practice, and they go in and they start piecemealing, adding things in, and that's not good enough. I mean, you need to commit to a restorative process. You need to create some intention to learn to treatment plan correctly. And all of it, Kirk, more than anything, starts with becoming a great diagnostician,
right?
Is to learn to do a complete examination. So that way you have all the information that you need to make a relevant diagnosis. And then that allows you to make a treatment plan based on the patient's desires, what their restorative and functional needs are. And then that gives you options for the patient to be able to sequence treatment if they need to financially and just figure out the best way to go about doing that.
Yeah, I love that. And so, you know, you're talking about a bigger thing here too. So if you're a young dentist listening, I want you to hear this. I often tell people go to Dawson and they're like, well, what am I going to learn? I'm like, it's not what you're going to learn. You're going to get in a good group of people that have your best interests at heart. You're going to get to know these people and you're going to come back with, you know, a little fire in your belly. You're going to be excited. And I think that's, you were talking about this before we hit the go button, but you know, you got to get into a group. You can't, you said piecemeal. Like if you're piecemealing your future together with what you're doing in this Facebook group, and you're kind of part of this thing and you're kind of part of this thing, you're going to see a lot of weird stuff out there. And you mentioned this, the social media thing, like this is a dynamic we were not prepared for. And I'm watching it affect dentistry in a way that I never thought, but like there's a lot of this stuff going on. Now I'm going to prompt you with a story. And okay. It's not a good one because it fits into okay. right where you're going. Like I was talking to a dentist. I'm like, you okay? I don't know. I go, well, what's wrong? Well, I posted a case and one of my heroes hasn't liked it yet. I'm like, that's occupying your brain. You know what I mean? Like we are all concerned about like our image, about the image. You know, can you go a layer deeper? Like you brought it up. I'm just adding context to it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the problem that we're getting ourselves into is that dentistry is starting to become a shame-based profession, really. You know,
What does that mean?
Well, there are dentists out there that, well, here's the problem with social media. The problem with social media is comparison, and comparison is always a cancer, right? Because Dr. Dawson used to always say that the enemy of contentment is comparison, mm-hmm. right? So what we're always doing is we're always looking at somebody else's highlight reel and trying to apply that to our real life.
Right.
You know, no one's ever looking at behind the scenes. Nobody's ever posting when a case went sideways and they're back in their office and they're in tears or they can't even think straight because they're so upset or confused or their patient's frustrated. Everybody's posting their highlight reels.
Right.
And that's not real. I mean, I have failures all the time. I make mistakes still. I'm not perfect. And anybody who says they're perfect, you know, we all know they're lying. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we want to do that. So that's what I mean by shame-based, that there are a lot of dentists and there are organizations within dentistry that a lot of the people in these organizations, they're not happy unless they can post something to make you feel unhappy about you, right? It's like you gain some sort of a personal victory by other people feeling bad about themselves. And it doesn't have to be that way. And wow. And the other thing that I'm really concerned about it that I see in some younger dentists today, Kirk, is that I see young dentists seeing what's being posted on social media and they think, oh, well, there's something wrong with me or I'm not good enough.
Right.
And that's a bad place to be. Or I think it's driving a lot of dentists sometimes to make treatment plans or to force patients into treatment that may not be the best thing for that patient. You know, one of the big problems we have right now in dentistry is that there are so many people that are being overtreated for all on X therapy. And there are so many dentitions out there that are still savable, but dentists feel this pressure. It's like, wow, I want to do these $50,000 or $60,000 cases, or, you know, I want to be able to post it on social media that I did this case and I want to do the surgeries or whatever. And there's so many people out there that are getting their teeth ripped out of their head for no good reason besides that some dentists want to make more money or they want an over-treatment plan for people. And I see this. I have young dentists coming up to me basically saying that in so many words that they feel pressured to do treatment that they're not ready to do or this might not be the right thing for the patient, but I feel like it's the thing that I'm supposed to do based on what I'm seeing on social media. I'm really concerned about it, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't even know what the answer is on that, but I will tell you, you know, you can only do what you can do. And if you stick to your core values and your convictions, you're going to be okay for the most part, don't you think? You can't let the outside influence what is in your heart and your head and what's the right thing for a patient. And that's what's so cool. I think, you know, I'm very biased about what you guys do, but you're never going to hear anyone at the Dawson Academy go, you know, you can get $1,000 more out of this procedure if you just like, that's never been said anywhere. And one of my favorite things that Pete used to say about money, because he really didn't talk about money, was, it's the byproduct. You do the right thing, you always make plenty of money, and you see the reverse where the money is the focus, and then we try to figure out the right thing later, and it's just a different way to think about it. So I'm not here to shame anybody on there, because there are people out there to teach that, but I think in the end, as a dentist, you got to find, you know, you got to find a voice, a place, a group where your values just match up. And that's one of the things that comes out loud and clear with what you guys do. If there's a dental student listening, and there are some, what would you say to the dental students listening today that are looking at a 30 or 40 year career? What would you say to them?
Well, I would tell them that somehow they made a very lucky decision to become a dentist.
Amen.
You know, because dentistry is one of the most amazing professions in the world. we get to change people's lives. I mean, we get, I tell you, it never gets old for me. I had an all-day patient yesterday, Kirk. We did an upper arch restoration. And when we got done, you know, you hand the patient their look at their provisionals and they start crying because they just are so overwhelmed by how they used to look. And then they instantly get to change into this look that they feel more confident. It's like their true inner self is revealed to them for the first time. There's not a lot of professions out there that you get to have that type of an impact on somebody's life.
Right.
And not only that, but it, you know, dentistry is such an amazing thing is, you know, you can work 10, 12 days a month and make incredible money if you become a very competent clinician and you can control your destiny. You want to do more surgery? You can do more surgery. You want to do more, you know, implants? You can do more implants. You want to be more prosthodontic based? You can do that. You want to get into right. the digital right. side of things? You can do that. You have every ability to pursue your dreams and passions in dentistry. And there's just not a lot of professions out there like that.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Even if you are an average dentist, you're still going to be in the top 4 or 5% of earners in the United States, which means you're basically in the top 4 or 5% of the world. And not only that, that means you're in the top probably 1% of all humanity that's ever walked the earth. I mean, we're pretty blessed to have chosen this profession.
Amen. Especially if you live in this great country or any country, you can make all the rules and practice however you want to practice. You know, yeah. One of the things, there are people that change, you know, there are people that fix teeth and there are people that change lives. It's not the same thing in dentistry, which is really, really cool. And then the other thing that people don't talk about, which you guys greatly facilitate, is a lot of dentists are stuck in these PPOs. And, you know, I'm like, I try to help them. It's not the PPO. People have to come to you because of you, because you're good at something. I hope they come to you because of you, not because you're on their list. That's the magic shift. And what you're going to teach people is choose to be good at something. And you'll find people will find you when you get good at something. Have you found that to be true in your career and as other dentists go down this path?
Without a doubt. But here's the thing about insurance is a lot of times dentists will mentally self-sabotage themselves. Well, I'm an insurance-based practice. Right. I can't do those types of cases. Where in reality, everybody, you know, most dentists that come into the academy and they want to do more bigger cases or they want to do more profitable cases, most of them, every patient they could possibly need is already in their practice.
Right.
They're just waiting for somebody to show them concern, Kurt. They're just waiting for somebody to express the fact that they could actually choose something different if they're given the option.
Right.
You know, Dr. Dawson used to always say that people inherently will choose to do what's best for themselves if they're given the ability to choose. And so that's just the biggest thing, is that your concern has to go beyond insurance. People will choose to do the treatment if they see value in it, if they start to value their long-term health. If that starts to become more important than what insurance will pay for, insurance doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
But what you have to do is you have to slow down enough to be able to connect with people at a higher level.
Right.
You've got to be able to slow down enough to do a complete examination that may take you 60 minutes instead of 6 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's where case acceptance really starts for all of these patients, is expressing concern. Now, the other part of that, Kirk, is then a lot of times you're going to overwhelm your patients, right? They're going to be given a choice that they've never been handed before. A lot of times patients are also dealing with shame because they know deep down that they've neglected themselves or they've made a series of bad decisions when they were younger that may have gotten them to a point to where they're a little bit ashamed of the situation they got themselves into. But that's where we've got to start to become very compassionate people and just love and support our patients and understand that the greatest advice I'll give to young dentists that are tuning into this right now is that early on, you're going to get rejected a lot. You're going to have a lot of people that say no. But what the most important advice I can give a young dentist is that you don't attach your self-worth and your well-being or whether or not you're good enough to the decision of other people.
Right.
Because a lot of times people say no right now, but they're not saying no to you. They're just saying no because I can't do this right now.
Right.
Well, maybe I need to make a couple better choices in my life to be able to have the finances to take care of myself correctly. But a lot of times, Dennis, we're a little strange sometimes and we start acting like scorned lovers. Or I asked you out for the prom, you said no. Well, I'm never going to look or make eye contact with you again.
Right.
But we just have to understand that most of the times when patients say no, they're not rejecting us. They're just, they're rejecting themselves, and they've got to make some better choices. And so concern and compassion are just huge, huge issues that a lot of dentists don't really think about. And that can really become a stumbling block to case acceptance.
Yeah, I love it. Go back to that. You said concern and compassion. And then also the under thing, the underlying thing in this too, is you learn confidence, a clinical confidence, because, you know, you can have concern and compassion, but once you understand how the joint works, how the teeth come together, I mean, there's a certain level of confidence that I'm going to say yes to. And I'm just learning about this is very real. You hear the word imposter syndrome, and I'm like, no, it's not really. And as I talk to these students, it's real. Like some of them, when they get the credentials to be a dentist, they actually don't think they're worthy. And I'm like, no, dude, you're very worthy. Like you've paid your dues. And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, no, you are. And so it's very real, that clinical confidence. And that's what you guys are really good at, is you need a support structure when you, because you'll doubt yourself at points. I mean, I still doubt myself on certain things. But speak to that, the confidence aspect of things in communicating with patients on top of concern and compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you gain confidence by educating yourself and by applying it, and also being not afraid to make a mistake. You know, you're going to, you know, one of the hard things, and one of the things I'm always stressing to dentists that are in the audience when I'm lecturing and teaching, is what I don't want you to do is compare yourself to me, or if you look at me and you're viewing me as being successful or possessing qualities that you want, or I'm doing cases that you hope to do one day, what I don't want you to do is project a story onto me that somehow I was an overnight success, or everything was easy, or I just kind of fell into it. Because, you know, my journey has been long and arduous, and I've had failures, and I've had times where I thought I was never going to get to where I wanted to be. And I, you know, maybe you go through a little rut in your practice where for a couple months, you know, the patients aren't coming in for the cases that you want to do. And you think, well, gosh, I guess the spigot ran dry, or I must be doing something wrong. But, you know, just no more than anything, Kirk, is all of us as human beings, we need to love ourselves a little bit more. We need to show ourselves a little grace and just understand that, you know, you are good enough. And if you start to make choices to give yourself the foundation that you need, a lot of that inner beauty starts coming out, and the patients start recognizing that.
I love that. And now Pete used to say something, you add your context to it, but I heard him say it one time. He's like, it takes 5 to 7 years to become an overnight success. And I was like, I don't want to hear that at 24. And then I got older and I'm like, he was pretty smart when he said that. What are your thoughts when you hear those words?
Yeah, well, you know, I used to be a young dentist, and I'd be 1 or 2 years out of school, and I'd be going to these courses, and I'd see these dentists that were 55 or 60 years old showing these cases. And I'd think, excuse me. Well, what kind of a turd am I that, like, I'm not doing these cases? And then I was thinking to myself, well, what kind of an idiot am I doing this to myself? Like, I have 2 years of experience. I'm going to compare myself to somebody with 30 or 35 years of experience. That's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair to do that. And, you know, one of the great analogies I always like to use is that everybody looks at Tom Hanks. You know, he's one of the best actors of our generations, right? He's, you know, Captain Phillips, he's Castaway, he's Mr. Rogers, all these things. But people forget that Tom Hanks started off on Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies.
Dressing up like a girl so he could save money to live in an apartment, right?
Yeah, and most people didn't think he was going to be a legitimate actor. You know,
his first couple of movies, what, Turner and Hooch, with like a dog drooling in his face for comedy. I mean, you know, that guy. I mean,
or Bachelor Party. Remember Bachelor Party? Like, I enjoyed that, but I was like, that, no way that guy's going to be a legitimate actor or ever win an Academy Award, you know?
No, or Keanu Reeves, like, starting off as Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, right?
Oh, I mean, now you're shaking off the dust there. I totally, that's one of those you just forgot he was even in that. Oh, my gosh.
That's right, but we always have to remember that big things have small beginnings, right? Yeah. Everybody starts somewhere. And you just got to love yourself. You know, one of the keys to happiness that I truly believe deep in my heart, Kirk, is that true happiness is enjoying what's happening right now.
I agree.
Where if you're on this journey to where it is that you want to be, don't be thinking you'll be happy when you get there, because you're only going to be happy when you enjoy where you're at right now. Enjoy the journey that's going to get you there. And those are the happiest people I ever see. And it took me a long time to learn that. I mean, I used to be a very high strung kind of, you know, I just want to go out there and do it. And I used to always be living in the future, thinking I'll be happy when something's going to happen to me. And that's such a mistake, I think.
Dude, I am totally picking up what you're putting down. I completely agree with that. And I would just add one more piece that's important to me is, like, if you're not happy, get in a different group, you know, because you become the average of the five people you hang around with most. Or if you're not hanging around with anybody, I'll just tell you, because I've been there, self-talk is not good talk. Self-talk, 80% of it is really negative, or 90% of it is almost like damaging. So it's really good to be around people who are like, dude, I've done that. Don't worry. Like, you're okay. You're going to be all right. You know, and the encouragement. And the other thing, fundamentally, God created us. We're not really created to do things on our own. We were designed as relational beings. So being in a continuum like that, and part of what, you know, at Dawson, half the times I don't even know what the heck you guys are talking about. It's just so like, wow. But I do remember all the hugs in the hallway. Do you know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
And that's the stuff that matters, right?
Well, you know, what I see in so many dentists, Kirk, is I see a lot of dentists that are punishing themselves for things they've done in the past, or wishing they could have done better, and letting that sabotage the future. But, you know, one of the great quotes, and I don't know who said this, but I stole it from somebody, is that the keys to the past do not unlock doors to the future. Mm. You got to let it go. And you got to don't let your future continuously be sabotaged by what's occurred in the past. And a lot, like what you said, a lot of that's who you hang out with.
Right.
You know, you can find 100 people that'll tell you what you can't do, but sometimes it's hard to find one person that'll tell you what you can do. Right. Yeah. And, you know, if you're wanting to soar like an eagle, but you're hanging out with turkeys, you're going to look around and you're going to start to think you're a turkey eventually.
Absolutely. I love what you're saying, too. And I've always thought like this, like, maybe if you're listening to this, maybe your life hasn't been an easy road. Maybe you're like, listen, you guys don't know how hard it's been for me. Hey, everybody's life is a story. It's a book. And the cool thing about stories is there's new chapters. You get to you could have the worst chapter ever behind you, but the chapter in front of you, you write it. Do you know what I mean? Nobody writes your story. And that's what's so cool about making a decision like this, to practice anyway. Now, the other thing is too, when you make a decision to do the right thing in dentistry, I don't know anyone that's failed by going, you know, they only fail, like, in dentistry's failures are really small. The ones that really fail in dentistry, if you get the Paul Harvey rest of the story, you'll see, oh, they built a Taj Mahal and did a saltwater fish tank. And then also, you know, like, they did really stupid stuff. The people that just stick to their guns do really good. They do really well, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the biggest key is in dentistry is, you know, you need to have a nice practice. It doesn't have to be a Taj Mahal.
Right.
What helps is treating people the way you'd want to be treated. It's treating people with respect, integrity, honesty. And if you treat people that way, people are going to come and throw money at you. But I know a lot of dentists that, you know, build multi-million dollar offices and they're still struggling. You know, because patients don't make decisions based on the car you're driving or how your practice looks. They make a decision based on how they feel about you.
Right. Let me dish you one of the questions. Okay, so listen, I'm all in on what you're saying. You don't understand. I got to practice with like 16 people. There's no way they're going to go for this. I got team members. You know, I bought this practice from a good guy. They only did patch. Like, how the heck am I going to learn this stuff and get these people to buy in? You've heard that one before, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, the key is that the good news about that is you already have thousands of patients that need this care. Right. You know, the reality, Kirk, is that most Americans have been undertreated over their lifetime. Most have been overtreated because they have been within this insurance model for 35 or 40 years.
Right.
And it's always the crown of the year club, or this is what we'll do. We'll handle these teeth are the worst this year, and we'll do these next year. And you're on a treadmill. You're never gaining any long-term oral health. And so, you know, the bad thing is, like, there's like 10 years ago, there was that Reader's Digest article where they sent like 7 patients into like 10 different dental offices and got 10 different treatment plans. And they're like, aha, Dentists are criminals. They're crooks. They're ripping people off. And no, no, not all care is the same. And right. and the reality is that a lot of dentists, they have more clinical skills than others. They can solve bigger problems, right? But as a rule, most of our patients have been undertreated over their life.
Yeah. Now, couple this, too, with things that we've learned a lot. Like, the worn dentition was one of those concepts that you're like, oh. And then I walked into a room one day, and I was like, there's 400 dentists in this room. I guess worn dentition must be like a really important subject. And now it's a really important subject. Speak to what that means to a younger dentist and the longevity of their career. How important is the worn dentition and understanding that?
Well, absolutely. So, you know, patients that are functionally high risk patients, occlusal risk patients, they're the ones that break dentistry. You know, they're the ones that break our single units. They're the ones that we do an anterior crown and they can't get comfortable or they break it off at the gum line. They're the ones that cause us the most problems because they are the highest functional risk patients. Now, here's the good news, bad news. There's a lot of these patients out there that are desperate to have their teeth look better. They're desperate to feel better about themselves. They're desperate to maintain their teeth for the rest of their life. You know, when you see these 45 or 50 year old people that have central incisors that are 6.5 millimeters long, and the average unworn central incisor is 10.8 millimeters long, you know, when you start looking at it and the fact that these people have lost 40% of their tooth structure, that's insane to think right. about. And the problem with worn dentition patients is their problems don't level off. They actually start increasing and they get worse exponentially.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the greatest things about becoming a good diagnostician, and this is really the greatest responsibility when you become a complete care dentist with the DOS Academy, Kirk, is that you need to catch these people early. Right. Because every 50 year old train wreck started off as a 22 year old that was just starting to show early signs and symptoms of what they were going to end up with 30 years down the road. And what an amazing privilege that we can do, that we can stop or get in the and cut that off right before it gets going, cut the head off the snake and kill it. Yeah. And keep them from becoming those train wrecks. That's a great responsibility and a wonderful thing. But don't worry, there's going to be plenty of people out there that are still going to need our work. But these patients that give, you know, tingles down our spine or make the hair on the back of our neck stand up because we know they're the high-risk patients, they're actually very treatable if you know how to treat it, if you know what caused the problem. Was it airway? Was it parafunction? Was it a CRMI interference discrepancy? Was it attrition? Was it abfraction? Was it erosion? Was it chemical erosion? You know, when you can figure out and know what caused that and then treat it appropriately, and most importantly, make sure you get the teeth back three-dimensionally in space where they're supposed to go, these cases can be very predictable to treat, and they're very profitable. They're very fun. And when you start to get a reputation doing those cases in your community, it's great when these patients walk in the door. They know it's going to cost $40,000 and they know you're the person to do it. And I got a check and let's get rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
Those are great times
yeah.
when that happens.
Now let's go right there. And if you're listening, please forgive me because we're going to have some fun here. You know, because I was this kid, you know, in your 20s. And if you have 20-year-old kids, you know this. You have the whole yeah. world figured out. My dad tried to right. teach me a lot in my 20s. I was like, Dad, thanks, but no thanks. I know what I'm doing here. And then you get to be 30 and you go, wow, there's a lot I don't know. And then you get to be 40 and you go, I don't know if I know anything. So let me ask a pointed question. And the people in our community, you know, don't usually ask questions like this, but I'm going to just have some fun. So please, Lenny, come on. I mean, you're asking me to be with you for 2 days in this whole, like, DOS. Like, what are you going to teach me for 2 days that I don't know? Come on. Or that I didn't learn in dental school. Like, what are you going to – and so what happens in those 2 days?
Well, you know, you're going to learn how to diagnose. You're going to start to understand the system. You're going to start to learn the problems that cause – all the different problems that cause us problems, right? We're going to teach you the foundational skills of – aesthetics, treatment planning, the different options that we have to solve problems. And we're going to give you that foundation that's what the veil that gets lifted. You know, I've never met anybody that came into our first seminar that didn't walk out with their jaw on the ground dragging and their mind is numb. Yeah. And then at the same time, they start thinking back to all these patients that they're like, I could never figure out what was going wrong with this patient. but now I know. You know, and it's one of those things where sometimes it's not really complicated. It's just that we were never taught it. And then, you know, it's and then once you start to see things differently, you can't go back. It's, you know, it's part of like the reticular activating system in your brain. Right. It's like, you know, if you bought like a BMW 3 Series, you never saw them before. But once you buy one, like everywhere you go, oh, there's my car. Right. There's my car. There's my car. Well, the same thing happens when you come through our first seminar is you're like, holy smokes, holy smokes, holy smokes. Now I know why this happens. And now I got to figure out how I fix these problems.
Yeah, very well said. You're going to come back with a new set of lenses and how you see the world. And that's more valuable than the skill itself. You know, remember, your problems really aren't your problems. It's how you think about your problems. And you guys are really good at helping people think better. And I love it. I love it. So any last thoughts you have on this whole idea of getting ready to go to the next level?
Yeah. So, you know, when you're ready to go that next level is predictability. That next level is starting to raise your income through decreasing your overhead, increasing your revenue per hour. And then the next level is learning how to practice within the insurance age and not let insurance be the factor that drives how things go in your practice. Yeah. If you're ready to cross those barriers and start to see the better side of dentistry, if you're ready for your practice to be working for you instead of you working for your practice, then it's time to go to that next level.
Absolutely. And this feeds so many, this solves so many, or it's part of the solution to so many challenges. But I would totally echo your sentiment. It's like, don't worry about what PPOs are doing. Just get focused on who you want to be and where you want to go. And you're going to find the world's going to help you. Like, it's pretty cool how that all
That's
works.
Right.
Now, Lenny,
absolutely.
We're going to do this. We're actually, and like I said at the beginning, we're going to host it. So if you guys go down to the show notes, you're going to see links to all of it. But like, if I want to learn more about what the Dawson Academy does, or if I want to follow you, like, how do I get a hold of you? How do I find out more about what you're doing? What else do you guys offer at the Dawson Academy?
Yeah, best thing to do is just get on our website, thedawsonacademy.com, and you know, you can find out more about our core curriculum. You can find about our elective classes. You know, we have elective classes on all on X treatment. We have electives on anterior bonding. We have electives on dentures. If you want to make your dentures more predictable and more aesthetic and more functionally successful, we've got electives on that. We offer a great variety of courses. We also offer a year-long live stream, which are once a month, four-hour courses. We got a lot of offerings on there. And if you want to learn more, just get on the website and check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to highly encourage you guys to check it out. It's going to be awesome. And I'm going to do a whole bunch more with Lenny, but make sure you join us here at the ACT Dental Training Facility. You're going to love it. Very intimate environment. You're going to see the best of the best do what they do, and you're going to be cared for. And when you talk about concern and compassion, it's a lot of fun to be around a good group of people heading in that direction. Lenny, thank you, brother, for being on. And you know I prompt you this on all the time. I am tired of people going, when are we going to go to Napa again? I'm like, I'm waiting. Actually, we're waiting for the world to come back to where it needs to be. But I'm going to plant the seed with our listeners every day. Lenny gave me the greatest technical educational experience of my life. It was in Napa Valley. So I'm going to plant that seed with you guys, and we're ready to roll. We're going to announce it together. And I got a whole big group of people that are ready to go. I'm like, all right. So it'll be fun.
I can't wait. We just need the world to get back normal again to where it's not such a crazy thing.
It is. It is. Well, thank you, brother, for being on. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, do us a favor. Just hit the share button, share with your friends. And hey, do us a favor. Give us a good review if you enjoy this stuff, because we always like finding like-minded people like you. I love this profession. I'm going to keep bringing it over and over again with great guests like Lenny. Every time you show up, I'm going to give you a little bit of something. I want your practice and your life to be better, and you can help the rest of us enjoy this great profession. So until we see you guys next time, keep enjoying your day. Keep listening. Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Kirk.
Thank you. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes
or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.